We invite you to visit Maserati Jacksonville today for a personalized luxury driving experience like no other. Plus, for a limited time, take advantage of our historically low interest rates. Visit online at MaseratiJacksonville.com.
Hey, welcome in. Glad you're along for the ride on a Monday. Excuse me, I gotta clear my throat. Ooh, boy.
That's what all-night traveling will do.
All-night traveling and calling a lot of not great plays, maybe. Maybe there's that. Glad you're with us on a Monday. Frank Franti, Hayes Carline, Lauren Brooks, Andrew Gibson. Yeah, travel one, but flew the red eye, got back at mid-morning or so. But
the red eye was delayed.
Delayed a little bit. But like I told the boys at the handoff, you know, I get to call NFL games. I can handle a little long travel, so we're doing just fine. We're doing better than the Jags. I'm going to weigh in on the Jags in a bit. We'll talk all about the Jags today. Today, John Osher joins us just for one segment. He, too, has a contact tracing issue, so he doesn't have COVID. He's good, but he's got a quarantine for a few days, and so he'll join us just by phone today.
How was calling the game with just Tony Baselli yesterday?
It was great. We had a wonderful time. We missed Jeff because Jeff's a big part of it. You know, last year, because of contact tracing, we did one without Tony. So Jeff and I did one last year, and Tony and I did one this year, and they're fine. They're both so good, and they're both so professional that we can do it, the three of us. We can do it, any two of us, and it worked out fine. So, we had a good time. So it was a good trip. I will tell you this. Los Angeles, no matter where you are in Los Angeles, if you want to drive 3 miles, I don't care where you are. If you want to drive 3 miles, count on about 25 minutes. It's astounding. You've been to LA, right?
Yeah, but I didn't really drive around. It was for like the NCAA tournament.
Oh yeah, I'm just telling you. If you're gonna go to LA, but it's the one.
That's why they have so much smog.
I guess so.
They have so many
all
cars.
The cars.
Yeah.
But it's really nice. Marina Del Rey is where they put us up, which was wonderful. And it's only about it's really very close to Venice Beach and to Santa Monica. And those are really cool areas. So we had a wonderful time. Everybody but the Jaguars, I suppose. Billy Napier's press conference. What did you think? Did you like it? Like what you saw?
I did, yeah. I love the vision that he has, and I think he's going to be fantastic.
I'm really fired up for him. Yeah. I think he's perfect for what they need.
Okay. What did y'all think about Brian Kelly getting the job? What did y'all think about the fact that Brian did you like Brian's introductory press conference?
Yeah, I mean, it was brutal. I mean, I don't think it's a good fit regardless, and I think they will be disappointed with the results. I'm not going to say he's going to go 4-8. But I do not think he's going to deliver what they think he's going to deliver. And I thought that before he made a clown of himself at the LSU basketball game.
What do y'all think if we do the entire show with a Southern accent?
I think that would be fantastic.
It's a great night to be a Tiger. I'm here with my family.
It would be easy for me to do the entire show with a Southern accent. I've been told that if I have a few too many drinks, then that comes out from time to time. By the way, FSU, LSU is even more intriguing.
Did you just say time to time?
I did. Yeah, but yeah, FSU, LSU to kick off the season is going to be very interesting.
And I will tell you, I told the guys this at the handoff. We all talked about it the other day. Of all the Joey Molineros, that's the best one. If you haven't seen that, go on Twitter or go somewhere and find that one.
We talked about it on Friday, and Gibby played about 20 seconds
if
of it.
You haven't,
I would play the whole thing if we had time.
If you haven't heard, of all the ones he does, number one, Saban's is best. His Collinsworth is good. His Cowherd's good. But his best is Saban. But if you haven't heard that one, I thought the Saban trick-or-treating was really good when the kids were coming to have. But if you haven't heard this one, his Saban during this thing was absolutely spectacular. Brian, you've been there a day. Molinaro does such a great job of, and I'm serious, but of channeling. When you do impersonations, I guess, I don't know how to do impersonations, but the people who do impersonations, it's not just the voice, the tenor, the look. You can almost feel that person feeling that. And he does such a good job of Saban getting more and more irritated during the, and all of them. He did it with the Halloween, you know. He does such a good job. Give me just a. I don't want to play. It's long. I don't play all of them. Give me just a little touch of Joey Molinaro as Saban with Brian Kelly.
Hey Brian, just wanted to call and congratulate you on the new job.
My word. Is this the Alabama slammer himself to whom I am speaking with?
This is Coach Saban.
will consider me flying a kite in the middle of a thunderstorm on a hot July day because I am shocked.
I'm telling you,
it's not even a saying.
But if you got to watch the video of it, because you got to see the facial expressions, his Saban facial expressions are tremendous. All right, a lot of things to get to today on the program. Mario Cristobal, I'll tell you this. I'm still holding out hope that my man Gino Toretta is the AD. I know they're in long conversation with Dan Radakovich from Clemson, reportedly going to make him the highest paid AD. I'm still holding out hope that my man Gino, I can tell you my man Gino, I think he's in it. Now, if Radakovich wants it, you go get Dan Radakovich for all the money in the world, then you do it. But I would think my guy's still in it. But I'll say this with Cristobal, if Miami continues to be as irrelevant as they've been for two decades, it won't be lack of trying. Because if they're really paying him $80 million over 10 years, did you see that? Mm-hmm. It's a 10-year deal for $80 million. I never believed Miami would pay that kind of money. Did you?
No, but yeah, this is one of those that if this doesn't work, then what will?
Yeah, that's
because
right.
It's a dramatic increase in their commitment to football, and I think it's going to pay off. I think the Hurricanes are getting ready to have a tremendous run under Mario Cristobal.
So we'll talk a little bit about the carousel. I get some thoughts about where the carousel headed. We talked some trends. I saw some more trends coming up today on the program. Let's take a break. Let's talk about the Jags when we come back. You know, I will tell you, and I told the guys at the handoff, there was a time when it was 13-7 in that ball game the other day, yesterday, that being in the stadium, stadium's magnificent, by the way. It's not like nothing I've ever seen. But there was a time when in that stadium, you could feel the Rams fans didn't like their team. You know, you can tell when fans don't like their team. They lost three in a row. Matt Stafford, do you see how many guys he missed in the first quarter and a half?
Yeah.
Guys running wide open. I mean, missed them by three or four. I mean, three or four feet over their head.
Cooper Kupp had no catches on their first five drives. How does that happen?
Right.
Now, they made up for it.
But they missed them a few times. But there was a point there where the Jags defense and the Jags offense put the defense in a terrible position. Started out 10-0 because of bad special teams coverage and a fumble. But after that, for about the next quarter and a half, the Jags defense buckled down and really frustrated them. And I remember thinking, if they could just find something offensively. Right now, when you're playing a team that's lost three times in a row, that expected to go to the Super Bowl, that traded for everybody. I mean, this team traded for Johnny Unitas, Joe Namath, whoever's out there. They went and got them all. So they traded for everybody they could get. They started 7-1. They had Super Bowl aspirations. All of a sudden, they've lost three in a row. When you get a team like that, they're on the ropes. If you can go get a team like that that's on the ropes and just do something offensively. And, the Jags can't find any offense. We'll talk about that. What do you do? We'll talk about the James Robinson situation. We'll talk about Trevor and a whole lot more. We'll kick it off with some Jags talk. We'll talk about Billy Napier's press conference, Brian Kelly to LSU, Mario Cristobal. That's the news of the day. He is the new Miami coach. A lot of thoughts about that all coming up. This is 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Have you heard about the lonesome loser?
Man, you are one pathetic loser.
I'm surprised that nobody's picked a quarterback from this Big 12 game. I'm going to go with Spencer Sanders, Oklahoma State quarterback.
Before you do something stupid, you may want to think about this.
And it's intercepted on the ricochet. And Sanders has thrown four interceptions today.
He's a loser, but he still keeps on trying.
Well, Gibby, God bless your soul. At least Gibby picked quarterbacks we've all heard of.
You're a good sport, Gibby.
You are a good sport. For the record, Gibby, I picked quarterbacks we'd heard of, too. But we got beat out by Bradley Zapp and Matt Bonner. Okay, so
it's Logan Bonner.
Who knew Matt Bonner could play football, too?
I don't even remember the names of the guys I picked, but I wish them well in their future endeavors.
Matt Bonner played for the Charlotte Bobcats, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Hayes picked some dude named Zapp.
William Zapka.
Okay. Zapp, Bailey Zappi. I looked up the pronunciation.
William Zapka was due to win. He had some losses in his career.
Yeah. William Zapka, you can never count out.
Yeah. Kamala Harris, you picked. Okay.
Which one was that? Oh, yeah.
Somebody named Harris.
Yeah, that was Franco Harris.
Yeah. And Denny Crum. Okay, so you picked.
Yeah, and Denny Crum.
William Zapka, Kamala Harris, and Denny Crum were your three picks. For 7 points, I honestly didn't know who your people played for.
Neither did I.
I, I, Lauren picked Matt Bonner.
He did well for me. Thank you very much.
Kenny Pickett and Play Some Tunes, which is an unusual name. So Lauren had 8 points with a bunch of no names. Hayes had 7 with a bunch of no names. I had
Kenny
6.
Pickett is potentially a Heisman Trophy winner. Well, maybe not anymore. But
and I had 6 points with guys I followed throughout their careers, Hartman, Ritter, and Lewis. Okay. And poor Gibby, the one guy that tried to take it seriously, lost. Okay, Gibby, so you're it's an honorable loss, Gibby, for what it's worth.
Yeah, I don't know how serious I took it. But I thought Spencer Sanders was the one touchdown. He threw 4 interceptions. Come on, man.
Well, and I was surprised App State didn't do a little
Bryce
bit
Bryce guy
more
didn't throw any.
No, he didn't turn the ball over, but he threw one. He threw one at the end.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, he threw one.
Were y'all watching the Baylor game live?
I was not. Well, I did see the end live, but okay.
Bryce threw one and Sanders threw 0. That's what it was.
Correct. Yeah.
But the tackle that McVay for Baylor made to save the game everything.
What a play that was.
I thought for sure Oklahoma State was scoring. The moment he got the handoff, I was like, well, that's over.
And that set the tune for the weekend. So, Gibby, if you'll do the honors, that'd be fantastic.
Which way do I go? I forgot how to lose.
We're all kind of. Yeah. Well, you look like you've caught up a little.
I haven't caught up to you, though.
You have not caught up to me. I think you can bring us a little grub here. So here's the way it works now. I'll give you the standings. Gibby has lost 2 now. He has lost the NBA, and he's lost the quarterback challenge, I'll call it, or the TD pass challenge. So Gibby and Hayes both have 2 losses. Lauren and I both have 4 losses. So here's the deal. This is big news. There he comes. There's Gibby.
All right.
Gibby, you're the best. Gibby now has 2 losses now, so you and Hayes have 2. So you're not mathematically in the clear yet, but you're in pretty good shape with 2 to play. I would say pretty good shape. There we go. What you got there for us, Gib? Okay. I'm guessing that's Lauren Brooks. All right. Well done, Gib. I am hungry for some Bonos, I can tell you that. Gibby's such a good guy. I just throw him in here and let y'all figure it out.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, that's right.
Hayes is the brisket plate. I had turkey and chicken. Frank had sausage, and I don't know what you had.
Gibby, you're a good man.
I've lost too many times to know how this works.
Thank you, Gibby.
What a great weekend it was, though, for college football. But here's the way Loser Monday works now. So we're down to 2 events, okay? We're down to picking the bowls, and we are down to our NFC-AFC championship game points totals.
Right? Go ahead. No. Finish. Okay. Right. I apologize.
Thank you. Thank you for letting me finish. So Gibby has 2 losses. Hayes has 2 losses. Lauren and I both have 2 losses. If either of you lose twice.
You guys have 4 losses.
Yeah,
right?
We have
4
losses.
What did I say?
2, but that's okay.
Yeah. 2-2-4-4.
I threw you off.
2-2-4-4. So if either you or Gibby lose twice the last 2,
right.
Then it's a 3-way battle
of
losers.
And then we have to do another one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A playoff between the 3 losers. If you and I don't lose again.
Mm-hmm.
And they each lose once, then we have our playoffs. So you guys are in pretty good shape. The worst you can do is lose twice, and then it's a runoff.
Was your question going to be, are we doing all the bowls?
Yeah, I'm just curious.
I'm probably going to make an adjustment now, okay? Yeah. It's going to be all the bowls. I think it's probably a better chance now. It'll be Power 5 teams, but I'm going to look at all of them. I'll have sheets. Everybody can fill out the sheets, so there's that.
My analytics team can stop working on Jacksonville State.
Yeah, and you can start working on. I'm going to go out on a limb and go. Zapp, Harrison, Crum probably aren't going to play in these bowls.
Okay,
I think it's pretty safe.
Fellas, you've done your job. Right, rest easy.
Yeah,
now.
And I can pretty much tell you that Matt Bonner's not going to play in one of the bowls either. So there's
he led the way along with Zappy in touchdown passes thrown. Thank you very much.
So basically you're going to have, let's say, 15 games.
That's right.
And we're going to pick the winners in 15 games. Whoever has the worst
record.
We're
just picking straight up.
Very simple. Picking it straight up. So there you go. And then, of course, we'll do our last one at the end of it. So there you go. But 4-4-2-2, those are
losers. So Florida UCF will be in there, right?
It will be.
I wasn't sure because UCF is not a Power 5
player. Florida's like a 6.5-point favorite. Yeah. Florida, I'm sort of surprised.
Florida UCF will be in there. Yes. So I'll have about 15 bowls in there. So there you go. But Gibby, you're a good sport. Thank you. Again, Gibby's only lost twice. Hayes only lost twice. Lauren and I are the big losers. We have to see what happens. It'll be interesting to see, what I do want to see is if one of them lose the bowls, I do want to see how nervous they'll be at the end.
I'm nervous now.
They had a commanding lead.
I've worn the hat.
It's not fun. Worn it also.
That's right. Gibby and I haven't worn the hat, but I think I'm about to change that, it looks like. I don't know where to go with the Jags offense anymore. I know the standard thing. We've talked at length about they're struggling here and James Robinson needs the ball more, and we know they don't have very good receivers or don't have a lot of receivers. But as you I mean, there's five more games here. There's five games left to be played, and there's now this helpless feeling. They're all trying, and Jeff Prosser, when I was driving back from the airport, had a great – I had not made this comparison. We kept making the Peyton Manning comparison. Prosser did a great comparison of Trevor's numbers this year to Josh Allen's his first year in Buffalo, and it was really good. And Jeff hit it. I don't have it exactly in front of me, but essentially Josh Allen completed 52% of his passes.
It was like 10 touchdowns, 12 picks.
Yeah, 12 and 10 or 10 and 12,
yeah,
right?
Something like that.
So, which is very similar to where Trevor is.
Yeah, 10 touchdowns,
receiver.
12 picks.
Yeah, 10 and 12.
52.8% completion.
Yeah, 52, 10 and 12, which is essentially where Trevor is.
And Zay Jones was his best receiver.
And had no good receiver.
And 2,000 yards. Just
yeah,
2000
yeah. So close to where Trevor is. And he got a little better the next year and then extremely good that third year. Well, that's a great, because he's very much both tall, both athletic, both good runners, both big arms. So that's a really good comparison. So I'm not worried about Trevor Lawrence. I'm not one bit. And that was the best comp that anybody came forward with for me. But I do think they're smart. They'll get receivers because everybody knows they need to get it. I'll say it again. They need high volume receivers. They need guys who have caught a lot of passes at the college level or at the NFL level, not guys that run 100 miles an hour at the combine or bench press 225 1,000 times, guys who've caught a lot of passes, because those are the guys that know how to run routes. Those are the guys that know how to position their hands, position their bodies. Those are the guys you need. It's not surprising to me that right now the guy playing the best at that spot is Laquon Treadwell, because he was a very good college receiver. Okay, he's not the fastest guy, but he was Ole Miss, he was a very good player at Ole Miss. In the SEC, you know, I sound like an SEC snob, but go back and look at all the SEC receivers that are stars in the league now. Number one, half the Alabama team, that Alabama group of Julio and Amari Cooper and Waddle and Ruggs and Devontae, and it's unbelievable. Well, and then the LSU guys, Justin Jefferson and Chase, and I mean, at some point, it's not an accident that those guys that come out of that SEC are pretty good receivers because they're playing against NFL defensive backs their whole college careers. That's why. So I'm not worried about that. I think that'll happen. But I don't know where you go the next five games. We could sit here and spend a whole segment ripping them and how bad they are, and because everyone's done that. But the next step forward, we're an afternoon drive. We've had a day of that. The next step forward and after is, what do you do? Where do you go? I kind of with you, Hayes. Why play James Robinson? Why dress him if you're not going to play him very much? If he's part of your future, nobody would debate that. That's whether Travis Etienne beats him out like you think he might, or whether they share time or whatever, nobody debates James Robinson's part. He just had a 1,000-yard season. Nobody debates he's part of your future. What do you do? Sit him out a little bit. What do you do offensively? They're trying to find answers. They're bringing in guys left and right. What do you do?
Hey, this is what I wrote for 1010XL.com off the game, because I'm with you. I'm not going to sit here and write 500 words about how the team is terrible. I mean, everybody knows that.
And we've done that.
Right. I mean, everybody knows that, and so – the two things I would advise, and this is what I wrote, the first one no one's going to like, but that's fine. He doesn't need to fire anybody right now. Don't fire Daryl Bevel. Don't fire anybody, because the last thing that this operation needs is more chaos. You've got a rookie quarterback. Make the changes once you get to the finish line, but I would not upset anything right now, because it's already so bad. I don't think it's going to help anyway. So you're doing is introducing, I think, a variable into this with Trevor Lawrence, that you're taking him from a situation that isn't very fair, and you're making it just incredibly unfair for Trevor Lawrence. So I would not fire anybody. If I was Urban Meyer, I think you need to get to the end of the season, and then you can make your evaluations. But the biggest thing is, they've got to rest James Robinson this week at Tennessee. You're not winning in Nashville. You're not going to win the game, just as you weren't going to beat the Rams. I mean, he needs rest. It is clear he needs rest. Every time they talk about him, they talk about how hurt he is, how he's not 100%. They need to go ahead and rest James Robinson, because to me, this season now comes down to two games. And it's the two games after this coming game against the Titans in Nashville. And that's the Houston Texans and the New York Jets. If the Jaguars want to salvage anything from this season, they've got to win both those games. They've got to get to, you know, 4-13, which no one's going to throw a parade over. I understand that. But it would at least show a +3 win improvement, which there aren't going to be very many teams in this league. They're going to be able to say that. Cincinnati's the only one that can currently say it. They've already clinched that. But we're into December, and they're the only ones that have. So winning three more games than you won the year before is a fairly, I wouldn't say significant, but it is a positive step. But they've got to beat the Texans and Jets to do it. If I'm Urban Meyer, I'm not playing James Robinson this week. I'm getting him as healthy as I can for that two-game stretch against two bad teams that the Jaguars might beat, because you're not winning in New England, and you're not going to beat Indianapolis here in the finale, because those teams are going to have something on the line when it comes to playoff implications.
He had never fumbled in his career. The last couple weeks, he's obviously been banged up, and he's fumbled both times. So I do think there's something to he may need to rest. And certainly when Urban Meyer, you know, met with the media yesterday, and I'm sure he is today as well, asked about James Robinson and why, if he's so hurt, why he's playing, and if he's not that hurt, why he's not playing.
All right, and I would follow your lead. You know what else I would do? I would probably, I said this about Dan Arnold, and they were doing it until he got hurt. I would probably target Laquon Treadwell 10, 12 times a game. He looks to me like a polished NFL receiver. Marvin Jones Jr. does too, but I just don't think Marvin's very physical and fast anymore. Laquon Treadwell is not a super fast guy, but there's something there. Don't you guys feel like there's a body control thing there? Have you sensed that a little bit with him? Again, we're grasping for straws because there's not much there.
But I thought the week before James O'Shaughnessy was going to be a lot of help for after Dan Arnold went down based off of the way that he played against the Falcons, and then I thought he regressed.
Didn't jump off the page for
me. So I feel like Treadwell, yes, while he has looked good,
but O'Shaughnessy didn't jump off the page for me like he did you against the Falcons. He didn't look anything like the Dan Arnold did for me. So that's just me. But Treadwell has jumped off the page for me. So, look, I mean, they're a 2-10 team. There's not much there, you know. So for me, I'd throw him the ball. I would keep playing Trevor. I would protect him. By the way, we've given the line a little bit of a pass. There's not a lot of clean pockets either. You know, they say the Lions played pretty well. There's been some times where he sat back there and had a lot of time. There's a lot of times that he's been pressured 32% of the time. You realize that's fifth most in the league. So only four quarterbacks of the 32 starters have faced more pressure while trying to throw than Trevor Lawrence. Now, a little bit of that can be on you if you're holding the ball too long. A little bit of that can be on the core. But mostly that's an offensive line stat, is how often is your quarterback being pressured. Hey, he's being pressured an awful lot. We've talked so much, I'm guilty, talked so much about the receivers, maybe not as much about the fact that he hasn't had a lot of clean pockets.
Yeah, and certainly that was an issue against the Rams. And so, yeah, I mean, we've talked about it. I mean, they've got a problem at right tackle. Juwan Taylor has not had a good year. They've had a revolving door at center because Brandon Linder has had trouble staying healthy. Now, I think Shatley's played pretty well, but Linder comes back and then gets hurt again. And we don't know the severity of that injury yet. You know, Will Richardson has to come in at guard because, Ben Bartsch got dinged up a little bit. So, and Cam Robinson has been, I think, good, but not tremendous. And Norwell got pushed around yesterday. I don't think the offensive line, to me, is the biggest concern. But everything, when you're this bad, when you haven't scored 24 points in a game this season, when 23 other teams in this league have done it a minimum of five times, everything is broken.
That's putting those two stats together is a glaring stat. More Jaguars talk coming up later on the program in the next hour, and then, of course, in the 5 o'clock hour when John Osier joins us. When we come back, Billy Napier had a press conference. What did everybody think? That's our topic. Stay with us.
We're going to build the best football team in the SEC Conference. We're going to build the best football program in the SEC Conference. We must have a championship approach in everything that we do to accomplish this goal.
Now back to a Big Chief Tire Monday on The Frangie Show. Big Chief Tire. Visit BigChiefService.com.
The comments of the newest head coach at the University of Florida, Billy Napier. He coached his Louisiana team to a win over the weekend. And then on Sunday, he met with the media in Gainesville for the first time as the new Gators head coach. Frank, I thought he laid out exactly what he wants to do, and I think there's a lot of excited Gator fans.
I think so, too. I got a lot of thoughts about this whole thing, and a lot of it was watching Dan Mullen on game day. Did you guys see Dan Mullen on game day?
I did not.
He was fantastic. And here's a message to Gator fans, and I thought about this over the weekend. You can be mad at whoever you want. By the way, I can't tell you who to be mad at, but I'll tell you anyway. Don't be mad at Dan Mullen. Dan Mullen gave Florida three really fun years. Three New Year's Six Bowls, never lost to FSU, glorious win over Georgia in one of the greatest Georgia eras of all time, battled tooth and nail against Alabama a few times, turned Kyle Trask into this great player. Don't be mad at Dan Mullen. Dan Mullen did his part. It probably was time for the next guy based on the way this thing went. He didn't do a great job of this team. I was frustrated forever with the Damian Pierce stuff, but, you know, Dan Mullen, Gator fans, he wasn't going to recruit, and he wasn't the right guy to continue to build it, so they needed the next guy. But don't be mad at Dan Mullen. And I thought Mullen was fantastic. Did you think that?
I thought he was really good. I thought it was odd that he was using the Tennessee film against Georgia instead of Florida film against Georgia. But other than that, I thought he was really good.
But it was interesting to me that he did it. I mean, most coaches would be embarrassed that they got fired, that devastated. You know, I don't feel that. I feel like he was... You know, he's tweeting pictures of the Christmas trees and showing up on game day the very next week. I think he felt – I get the impression that he's not devastated. That he, okay, that one didn't work out. Got fired. I got $12 million coming.
Yeah, you can't deflate that ego.
Yeah. I think – well, yeah, but I just think he said, okay, I'll go do the next thing. And he will be fantastic on television if he ever decides to do that. If he doesn't coach, he'll be on it. It was funny. They scooped him up, and he was good. But it got me thinking. Billy Napier, when his coaching career is over, isn't going to television. He's not that guy. He's a ball coach. He's Southern. He's not going to be the most eloquent speaker. He's not going to be a public speaker when it's all over. There's not a lot of he's real. He's earthy. There's not a lot of I don't want to say salesman to him. I don't want to say it that way. But there's not a lot of phony. He's not slick. That's the word I'm looking for. Coaches can be slick. College basketball coaches really can be slick. He's not that guy. He's regular guy. And he has been brought to build a company. That's what he's doing. He's not there because of X's and O's. I hope his X's and O's are good. He's going to call his plays. I have no idea what his identity will be as a play caller. Do you have any idea? I have no idea.
He's heavy run.
Yeah, he likes to run. Okay, so I have no idea. And you just told me more than I know, so I don't know. Of course, I love the fact that you said you've now read every word ever written on him. So which is very solid work from you. But I have. What I do know is he brought there to be the general manager and build a company. Don't think for a minute he doesn't know his entire staff right now. He hasn't announced them. He knows. You're already seeing some of the guys some of the people on the support staff that have changed their Twitter profiles, have Gator logos on them. I promise you, he knows all 30 guys. When he announced that the Patrick Toney is coming as the co-defensive coordinator, he announced co. You know that means he knows the other guy, right? I mean, if you announce co, then you know the other guy. I think he knows his entire staff. He knows what it wants to look like. He knows how it wants to feel. I think he's already told how many. When Dan Mullen took the job, he went to Lee Davis, his recruiting person, the girl, and said, "You coming with me? You getting me on the plane?" I think this guy went to about 15 of those people. And so he's going to build a company. He's going to be very Southern. He's going to be very organized. He is a ball coach. He's going to look like your high school coach that wore the coaching shorts and the high white socks when I was a kid. That's who this guy is. And I think he will resonate. And I've talked to a few people down there now that are excited about how he'll connect with people, how he'll get along with people. Everybody's going to love seeing him come. He's never going to seem too good to talk to somebody. So I'm really excited about, I think, the presence, building the company, recruiting, building the recruiting staff, all the stuff Saban did. I don't know how he'll be as a play caller. I don't know how he'll be as a coach. I don't know how good he'll be. 33-5 gives me a little hint. I don't care where you're coaching. If you're 33-5 in the last 3 years, think about that number now. You're probably a pretty good coach. But I think he's there, Hayes, to build the company. He's there to be understated, building. He's not slick guy. He's good old coach, solid, hardworking, build the organization guy. That's what I took out of it.
He reminds me of Wyatt Earp. Like, he reminds me of the sheriff in the Old West that just kind of sits back on the rocking chair, and the bandits come into town, and he's not going to sit there and get his blood up. He's just going to sit there, and he's going to go get his peacemaker, and he's going to go take care of things. And that's what he strikes me as.
Good call.
Is this just Wyatt Earp, old school, I'm here to clean it up, and it's going to be great. And I think that I'm excited to see what he can do. Obviously, he's never done it at this level. But he checks every other box. And I'll say this from watching them on Saturday. The fact that they played as well as they played against a team, I mean, I'm not saying this because Gibby's sitting in the next room. Appalachia State is a good program.
Correct.
I mean, good program.
And
I would not want to see Appalachia State coming to the Swamp in the opener next year.
Right.
I mean, Utah is coming, and certainly that's a tremendous challenge.
But your point's a good one.
But for him to – With everyone knowing that he's leaving, everyone knowing that's his last day of work, and to see the little things that that team did, pushing piles, flying to the ball as a collective defensively, how clean they played, you just got a sense of, wow, if this is how this group plays, knowing that they and having known for a week that their coach is leaving, and this is how they're performing against a team that I think is pretty good at that level. To me, it speaks volumes for the character and integrity that Billy Napier must have to get that kind of a result in those situations. And we saw it with Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer elected to coach the Fiesta Bowl against Pitt when he was at Utah, and Utah just absolutely dismantled Pitt. And then Urban got on a plane and went to Gainesville. I think it says a lot about a coach when they stick and they get that kind of a result before they leave. And again, I think Scott Strickland has hit an absolute home run. I think Billy Napier is going to do wonders for the Florida program. And it may start slow. And to his credit, no bold proclamations, no you know, to your point, no slick politician, I'm going to get everybody fired up. He's just like, this is who I am. This is what we're going to do, one day at a time, one person at a time. And I did like when he said the only time he got a little, I thought, you know, confident outwardly is when he said, if I can't sign 25 good football players at Florida, then you'll be looking at a new coach. This guy is going to recruit at an ultimate level at Florida.
Yeah, and I love his attention to detail. We can talk about it in theory, but, you know, the exact example he gave yesterday is, I will call the plays, and then we will have two offensive line coaches, a head offensive line coach and an assistant offensive line coach. And it's that, you know, Florida, I think, had two offensive line coaches under Urban Meyer, and I don't know that since they have. He is going to focus on the offensive line, the defensive line, and he's going to have guys that are coaching them, you know, to the extreme levels. And so that's, I love to see that he's not just has a plan, but he already laid out his plan for us.
Yeah, when he says, to that end, when he says, I'm going to call the plays. I'll coach the quarterbacks with help from an analyst. Well, he knows who the analyst is. Yeah, that's not the job you just say, I got to go find an analyst to do that. And I think then the analyst just, don't we now know who it is?
Yep.
So he knows his staff. And there's probably some other guys he's either waiting for him to finish up where they are now, or they're still negotiating with him. But I think but you're right. He's not a politician. He's not there to win a press conference. He might have won the press conference by not being a guy there to win the press conference. So it'll be interesting to see. It is going to be interesting that he's not going to sign very many people, hardly anybody, next week. And his rationale is, his point was, he said, listen, what we're not going to do is, he said, I want them to get to know me. I want to get to know them. And if we have to wait till February, we'll wait till February. Now, the recruiting class isn't going to be ranked very high, but that's okay. So it's interesting to me. The way he went about it. I watched the game. Gibby, I was watching the game back and forth with the SEC game because I wanted to see how they would play. And I don't think they're going to be flashy. To your point, Hayes, they're going to be more physical spread. Everyone's running the spread now. So nobody's under center with the offset eye anymore. That day's over. So everyone's in the spread. But I think it's going to be more physical spread than it is firing it all over the lot. And it makes me wonder because – throwing it all over the lot, which we're getting ready to talk about our next segment, spread just beat physical spread in the SEC championship game. So it makes me wonder if there'll be a little bit of that too. So anyway, Billy Napier, the coach, Gator fan, seems happy. It'll be interesting to follow the way this whole thing plays out. When we come back, I want to stay on college football. What about the SEC championship game? What a game. What about college football Saturday, Lauren, to your point about the ending of the Oklahoma State-Baylor game? What a day in college football. We'll talk about that. We'll also talk about other coaches and the jobs they are now have, including Mario Cristobal, all coming up. Stay with us.
You guys gave us a lot of really positive rat poison. The rat poison that you usually give us is usually fatal. But the rat poison that you put out there this week was yummy.
Now back to a Big Chief Tire Monday on The Frangie Show. Big Chief Tire. Visit BigChiefService.com.
How giddy is Saban? I've never seen him this. Have you seen him this giddy?
Oh, yeah.
The last couple, ever since the end of that Auburn game, he's been giddy guy. Give them credit. So here's the question. And Lauren, to your credit, you've never bought Georgia, which was astounded me because there was nothing not to like. But you were right. They not just lost Alabama, they got rolled by them. So let me ask you guys, is it a one-off? Because I still think Georgia's got a special football team. I still do. I'm not backing off my pick that Georgia's going to win the whole thing. But now they got two tough games to do if they're going to do it. Was it a one-off? Or was it true that Georgia just didn't – Georgia has flaws and they didn't play anybody that could expose them. Which is it?
They're not as good as Alabama. I mean, I don't think Georgia's a great team, but I think there's a mental block when they see Alabama. I don't think that's changed, and I think it's because Nick Saban is a lot better of a head coach than Kirby Smart, and that's not to embarrass Kirby Smart. I mean, Nick Saban's probably the greatest college football coach that we've ever seen. But, yeah, Alabama's better, and they've got weapons. It'll be interesting if in the rematch with Alabama not having Mechie, because we talked about this on Friday. Like, would it make sense just to spread Georgia out and go after him that way, because you at least eliminate the impact of Georgia's interior defensive front? And you're not going to run on him anyway, so why even try? And, you know, so I just think I think Georgia is probably the second-best team in the country. But unfortunately, Alabama is still Alabama, and Alabama expects to beat Georgia when they see them. Georgia, I think, hopes that they can get it done, and I think there's a big difference there. And again, now if you're Georgia, what do you do at quarterback? Alabama has a month to get, you know, used to not having Mechie. They're going to get some players back that have been out. I think Alabama's going to roll Cincinnati, and I think they'll beat Georgia for the national title.
Yeah, and I'm not convinced that Michigan doesn't end up winning that game. I know Georgia's an 8-point favorite, but I think at this point in time, Kirby Smart, like you mentioned, with the quarterback situation, that's so up in the air that I just wonder if he's going to make the right decision when it comes to that game. And Michigan's quarterback duo has been playing really well, and they play very similarly. When it comes to this past game with Alabama, Georgia, the SEC championship, you can't give Nick Saban's team as an underdog, you know, all that extra motivation and expect them to not go out and play a spectacular game. And when it came to the quarterbacks, who had the better quarterback? Alabama. Who had the better offense overall? Alabama. To me, it seemed pretty simple that Bama was going to win based off of the fact that, yes, they were more tested. And I think to your point, Frank, on Thursday, when we were at Dome Hats, you said, I wonder if Alabama might have been overlooking Auburn just a little bit because they were already thinking about the SEC championship game. I think that was pretty obvious. They had their sights set on Atlanta, and they went out there and they played a you know, somewhat close game in the first half. And then by, you know, all accounts, the way that Bryce Young is able to get the ball to his guys is absolutely fantastic. And you end up with a game where now I wonder where Georgia's mindset is.
Yeah, I will say this. The extra motivation for Alabama, the whole rat poison thing, Saban plays that wonderfully, but nobody did anything wrong. Georgia didn't suddenly inspire Alabama with bulletin board talk. It wasn't that. Nick is pointing out the fact that people were doubting Alabama. Everybody doubted Alabama. It's not like how dare you doubt us. We doubted you because you were lucky to beat Auburn. We doubted you because you lost to A&M. We doubted you because you barely survived what obviously turned out to be a very mediocre Florida team. So we doubted you. It's not, you know what I mean? It's not like how dare you doubt us we had a good enough resume not to be doubted. Well, no, you really didn't. You had a good resume. You had an 11-1 in a great league. But, I mean, they probably should have lost to Auburn, if we're being honest. I mean, they probably should have. Now, give Alabama credit. They do know how to win. I'll tell you that. Alabama knows how to win games. And they were the better team on Saturday. They really were. And they took it to Georgia. I will say this. The amount of receivers they have turned out, Julio Jones, Amari Cooper, Waddle, and Devontae Smith, and Mechie, and whoever else I'm missing, the guys in the NFL. I mean, that list of guys that are really, really good players, I don't mean just pretty good players, Ruggs, and that is incredible, the amount of first-round talent they have at wide receiver. And I didn't know Bryce Young was that good. I've watched enough. I've seen him good. I didn't know he was that good. I mean, he was really, really good. Some of the throws, some of the plays, the option pitch to Robinson the one time when on the broken play, the deep ball to Williams to start the second half, was it? I mean, unbelievable play. You know how good Mac Jones is? That guy couldn't beat him out. If you want to know how good Mac Jones is, that guy couldn't beat him out last year. There's your, I don't care, freshman or not.
Isn't it crazy that Bryce Young may win the Heisman, and yet most people thought Mac Jones was better than him?
Well, he was better.
He was, yeah. And he didn't win the Heisman.
Right. Yeah, I mean,
one of the guys he threw it to won the Heisman.
I mean, so it really is amazing. Well, if they win it again this year, and they're the favorite to do it, it's like nothing. This is UCLA basketball in the 70s.
Except harder.
That's right.
Much harder.
With way more resistance, correct. I mean, that's a good point. But that's what it is. I mean, if they win it again, it's ridiculous if they win it again. This is the John Wooden of sports, and it's pretty amazing stuff. So we'll see. I wouldn't sleep on Georgia just yet. It was one game. It was one game they got punched in the mouth. I don't think you suddenly go to the other quarterback. I don't think suddenly you pull your guy, because if you don't win it with Stetson Bennett, then you don't win it with Stetson Bennett. But he's earned the right to keep playing, in my opinion. I think he has. So we'll see what winds up. Do you think they pull him? Do you think JT Daniels plays?
They should play JT Daniels.
Do you think so too?
I don't know what they will do. I think they should continue to play Stetson.
Yeah,
because I don't think JT Daniels is any better.
And I don't know how. Part of the reason I think that is I don't know enough about what I think JT Daniels is. You know, I saw him have some good moments against bad teams at the end of last year. There's some reason they haven't gone to him. Now, part of it's because they're winning with Stetson Bennett, but there's something in there. But we'll see what happens. Michigan Georgia will be an interesting game because they play the same. They're both defensive minded teams. They're the closest to not spread than any. You know, they're the closest to pro style, old school pro style run the ball offense that there is in college football. So they're very similar the way they play. I can't tell you enough about Cincinnati. I don't watch them enough, I know they were down 10-7 or at some point to Houston. So I can't. But it's going to be a fun playoff. I'll say that for sure. The coaching carousel. I was thinking about this today. Here's the teams that change coaches among the Power 5 teams. Florida, Miami, USC, Oklahoma, LSU, Notre Dame. Now, Virginia Tech did too. There's some others, but
in Oregon will.
And Oregon will. Good call. I forgot about Oregon. The Florida, Miami, USC, Oklahoma, LSU, Notre Dame changing in the same year. That's a blue blood convention. That's a good job convention, isn't it?
It's three carousels in one.
It's amazing.
It's incredible.
And so count up just in the last 30 years the national championships that are changing hands. Florida's got three. Miami's got five. Notre Dame's got one, 11 overall. LSU's got three. Oklahoma's got one. These are the teams.
That's 13.
How about that? I mean, just in recent years, 13 national championships. And they're changing hands. It's really amazing stuff. But if there's a theme, I told you one theme is stay away from controversy. People pointed out that Brian Kelly's in more controversy than I realized. That's probably a good point. But the other thing, too, is...
But he's so Southern. He'll make up for it.
Yes, he is. You know what else didn't get hired other than Lincoln Riley? Offensive X's and O's didn't get hired. You know, for a while there... Kingsbury getting an NFL job, Zach Taylor getting an NFL job, Kiffin being all the rage. It was Steve Spurrier 30 years later. Offensive X's and O's were getting hired. Not this time. Billy Napier is an offensive guy, but he's not an X's and O's guy. He's an organizational builder. Mario Cristobal, he's on the offensive side. He's an old line coach. He got hired. Brent Venables is a defensive guy, a tough-nosed defensive guy. Yeah, there's some defensive X's and O's, but that's a tough-nosed guy. Brian Kelly, I think he kind of came up on the offensive side of the ball, but nobody knows him as offensive guy. He's certainly not that. Marcus Freeman's a young defensive guy. Program builders more than fancy X's and O's of what got hired in this carousel.
Yeah, because I think Lincoln Riley would fit either. I mean, I think Lincoln Riley,
correct.
You know, but I think you can say that Lincoln Riley can build a program. Now, he took over one ready to win, but he kept it, you know, going for sure.
If you're an offensive X's, I'm glad you said it. Offensive X's and O's doesn't mean you're not a program builder. I'm just saying he's the only one that has that too, I guess.
Yeah, and that's why he was by far the best hire. I mean, that's what USC did was, I mean, to say A+ is there's not enough pluses in this galaxy. To give USC the credit they deserve for getting Lincoln Riley.
Brian Kelly started as a linebackers coach and then defensive coordinator and stuff like that. So, yeah, he's even more defensive. But I think the Mario Cristobal hire, to me, is the one that surprised me even more than Lincoln Riley to USC. I thought there was no way Cristobal was leaving Oregon and the program that he built and all those resources to go to a program that has been dormant now for 20 years. And so congrats to Miami certainly for getting him away from there, and we'll see, like you said, what shakes out with the AD. But of all the hires, that one surprised me the most.
Well, I'll say this. All the stories coming out of Miami is that they had enough. Miami won 5 national championships between 1983 and 2001. 5. In an age of parity, and okay, maybe there wasn't quite as much parity then as there's supposed to be now, although I wonder if there is now. They won 5 national championships in essentially a 20-year period. That's unheard of. 5. And haven't been relevant since. And I think, so if there's power brokers at Miami, I think the reason we're surprised, Lauren, we didn't know there were power brokers at Miami. That's the thing. Who knew Miami had power brokers? But if they do, somebody at Miami of significance said enough's enough. It is time to build this. And it is time to build this the right way. And by God, we're going to build it. And we don't care what it costs. Here's what it makes me wonder. Will they build a stadium? Will they always play at Hard Rock, or will they build a stadium?
They want to build the stadium.
Because I can tell you the reason Howard Schnellenberger left 100 years ago and went to the USFL and then landed at Louisville is he wanted a stadium. And he was talking to Donald Disney, not Walt Disney World fame, not D-I-S anyway. Do you remember this? There's a guy named Donald Disney with a Z, not an S, a Z. Donald, D-I-Z-N-E-Y, no relation to the Disney Empire, that had all kind of money and apparently was at one point going to build Miami a stadium, a 35, 40,000 seat on-campus stadium. And when it fell through, Schnellenberger left. And that brought in Jimmy and Erickson and all the rest. So I'm very intrigued with what will happen there. Because if he's as good as everyone thinks he is, if he's going to go build the infrastructure the way Napier is, ooh, there's a lot of players down there. There's a lot of ballers now. You start getting the Amari Coopers to stay home instead of going to Alabama and Ohio State, it's really going to be interesting. This state got interesting now. With Napier here, if he's going to do all that the coaches, that the fans hope he's going to do, with Cristobal there, if he's going to do all the fans hope he's going to do, it's really interesting.
Do you think Napier will be able to recruit Louisiana better than Brian Kelly?
No,
I don't. I think the LSU will still have more good Louisiana players than other people. But he'll grab a couple out of there because of his contacts there. And because you know he's had great relationships with all the high school coaches there. So he'll snatch one or two out of there. You know, if you think about it.
And that's all he needs to do.
Yeah. It's amazing how many players came out of there. You know, Warrick Dunn's from Louisiana. Ike Hilliard is from Louisiana. You start adding up the Louisiana guys that wound up at Brock Berlin's from Louisiana, the real big-time recruits that wound up. Isn't Brock Berlin from Louisiana? Maybe I'm wrong about
Brock
that.
Brock Berlin?
Yeah.
I think he was.
Yeah. So if you start I promise you Ike Hilliard was from there, mm-hmm. And I promise you Warrick Dunn was from there, and they helped Florida and Florida State win national championships. Florida State doesn't win its first national title without Warrick Dunn. Florida doesn't win its first national title without Ike Hilliard. I'm still my knees are still sore when I think the stop and start against FSU in that game. So you can get players out of there. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Florida flipped a 4-star running back from LSU just today.
Oh, they did?
They did, yep.
And so Yeah, you got to believe, if Napier's what you think, don't you believe he has been calling, talking? I mean, you said, has he talked to Anthony Richardson? I'll bet they've had three phone conversations. Wouldn't you think? Wouldn't you think he's that guy?
Mm-hmm.
One final thing.
I guess he's visiting with him. He hasn't flipped him yet.
Okay, so they're trying to flip him.
But yeah, there's a picture with him.
There's way late before we get to this. And in fact, I'll hold it for later, but let's think about this. Is there an obligation by Greg Knox to play Richardson and Jones so he gets to watch them both? Or at the very least to play Richardson? Because there's a lot of tape on Emery. There's not much tape on him. Isn't there some obligation?
If I was Knox and I'm trying to win the game, which obviously he will be,
right.
I don't know why you would start Emery Jones.
Right.
I mean, you just got a victory because you pulled him. So I would think Richardson starts and Emery Jones plays a little.
Right.
But that's what I would think it's going
to
be.
Let's get it back to Jaguars football. This is 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
I don't understand what Urban's doing with James Robinson. You can't have it both ways, okay? He fumbles, he sits out 20 straight plays. Carlos Hyde fumbles, he goes right back in. And then after the game, he says, oh, it's because James is beat up. Well, if he's that beat up, then don't play him. And if he isn't that hurt, then he's still your best. He's better than Carlos Hyde. I don't care.
Now back to a Big Chief Tire Monday on The Frangie Show. Big Chief Tire. Visit BigChiefService.com.
I can't confirm or deny, Carlion, whether or not in the last 2 or 3 weeks I've YouTubed the best of Susanna Hoffs.
Oh, nice.
I can't confirm.
I need to put that at the top of my list.
I refuse to confirm or deny it. Don't try and hold me to it. Okay. She was not appreciated enough.
No, she was not. Very underrated.
So there's that.
Magnificent performer.
Yes.
Voice.
Yes.
Of an angel.
Yeah.
And she's still fantastic today.
I saw something on one of the documentary shows, and they're interviewing her today. She is still she's still performing, and
yeah,
that's good. So
stunning.
So Buscelli's comment today about I don't understand what he's doing with James Robinson. Tony said it today. He thinks Urban can't have it both ways. If he's hurt, then don't play him. If he's playing at the end of the game, then he must not be hurt. Then why is he out of the game 20 straight plays after the fumble and Carlos Hyde is not? That's become a fan narrative a bit, I think. Here's what I think on that. I want you guys to weigh in on this. I think Urban Meyer, and I mean this, is gone to such lengths not to micromanage that he's removed himself in such a way that he probably doesn't know what running back rotation is coming. If whether it's Daryl Bevel or Bernie Parmalee, the running backs coach, those guys decide who's in, unbeknownst to the coach sometimes. I think we saw it at Florida with Damian Pierce and Malik Davis and Naquan Wright. I think Dan Mullen let Greg Knox decide which running back was in, and that running back coach wanted to play his guys evenly. I think this running backs coach wants to play these two guys evenly. You guys agree with that or not? We'll
yes.
get to whether that's a good idea or not, but do you agree that's what's happening?
I do.
Clearly, his hands off.
Yeah, he's letting them decide. He said two things in his presser today, Urban did. One of them was someone said, why would he be in the game at the end, if he's hurt, at the end of the game when the game's over? And Urban's response was, good point. Okay. Another time someone said, is he being punished more for fumbles or mistakes than others? And Urban said no, and then I don't have the exact quote, Hayes, but essentially said, not by me, at least not in my eyes. Does that almost imply that maybe that is the case with others?
I think you're free to interpret whatever you want, because Urban Meyer talks in circles on this so much that it's hard to decipher a clear message, and that's what's frustrating fans. It's like, look, if you are benching him because he fumbled, because you're upset with him, then at least, like, have the courtesy and the guts to say that. Say, we're not going to tolerate fumbling here. I don't care how many yards he's run for. But if you put the ball on the ground, you're going to sit for a while. And everybody would understand that. There'd probably even be a little bit of a sense of, good.
You're taking command.
Yes.
Yeah.
This looks like somebody with his hands on the steering wheel.
Yeah.
But this whole, well, I'm not sure. I have to check with Bernie Parmalee. You'd have to ask him. By the way, I mean, and not to say that he's been denied, it's not like Bernie Parmalee talks to the media every week. I mean, now, if you asked Jaguars PR, I'm sure they'd make him available. But it's not like it just, again, shows the disconnect there because it's not like Bevel or Cullen who do a mandatory weekly press conference. And that's beside the point, but it's just so there's no sense of identity. What is the identity of this program?
Yeah.
And there is none.
And I will say this. D-Rock tweeted this. Someone said, to the point we just made, if he's injured, why is he in the game at the end of a game that's a meaningless moment in the game? And Urban's answer today was, quote, "That's a good question." If I was advising Urban, from this point forward, I would say, Urban, the answer can no longer be, even though you're trying to be honest, the answer no longer can be, "I don't know. You'll have to ask them. That's a good question. I'll have to look into it." The answer's got to be, "Here's your answer. Here's your answer." And maybe that means stepping up and saying, "From now on, Bernie, I'm going to tell you who's in the game. And I'm going to tell you who." And then, because if you do that, then at the end, then at the press conference, you can say, "Here's why. I put him in because of blah. He was banged up earlier. I thought he was feeling better, and I thought he needed a few more carries just to get whatever.
I want to send a message to my team that we never quit."
Yeah.
High schoolish, but it's non-NFL thinking as that would be. You could at least somewhat
it'd be a better answer.
Understand it.
It'd be a better answer. And I think that's what Urban needs. And Urban's trying to get this right. He's trying to feel his way. You can sense at these press conferences he's trying to feel his way through how to do this. Well, we're 12 games in now. And I would think he would be advised, somebody should give him advice, Urban, what you should do moving forward on these situations is say, "Here's the answer to your question." Not, "That's a good question." Not, "I need to investigate that." Not, "I'm not sure." Not, "You need to ask the coordinator." Not, "You need to ask the position coach." "Here's the answer to your question." You don't have to like the answer. Here's the answer. I think right now, if I was Urban's advisor, I would go to him and say, "Look, this is what you should do. This is, no matter what the answer is, I think you're at a point now that that's how you should answer the question."
The boss who doesn't micromanage is the one who has employees who are successful at what they do, and so they don't want to get in the way or step on their toes. The boss who has to micromanage is because the employees are doing the wrong things, and therefore the entire organization is unsuccessful. The reason it's a fan narrative, Frank, is because it's so obvious that James Robinson is not going back out when he fumbles, and when Carlos Hyde fumbled, he went right back in. That's what they see, and they don't understand. And when he doesn't provide the answer, it seems like the entire organization has no idea what it's doing.
And the other thing that's obvious is James Robinson's a better player. That's the other thing. At the end of the day, fans just want the best guy in there. Fans aren't playing favorites. When the Gator fans wanted Anthony Richardson in there, when Gator fans like me wanted Damian Pierce in there, no one is playing favorites. They think they're the better player. And right. I think that's why fans feel the way they do. Fans don't care. Fans aren't prejudiced one way or the other because one guy went to this school or one guy went to that school. They want the best guy playing. And so I think that's part of it too.
The other thing I would say on this, there's two things. One, clearly Urban Meyer, they do not appreciate James Robinson like the fans do. There is a disconnect between how Urban Meyer and his staff view James Robinson and how the fan base views James Robinson.
And you felt that way, Hayes, to your credit. You pointed out the possibility of that before they ever played a game. I mean, I remember you after a press conference or something.
Yeah, and again, just their actions of how they handled it once they arrived. Signing Carlos Hyde in free agency, drafting Travis Etienne in the first round.
So he
doesn't like James Robinson. Now you would say, well, hold on, because I've heard him commend James Robinson in the last few weeks.
You mean like as a player?
Yes.
I don't think
he dislikes him personally, but doesn't like him particularly. He doesn't see a difference between Carlos Hyde and James
doesn't
Robinson.
Love his
to
game.
Him,
right, right.
They're the same guy.
Right.
Which obviously the numbers in our eyeballs would tell us that's not true. James Robinson is a superior player. Here's the other part of this. Urban Meyer in early June absolutely constructively, but for lack of a better term, ripped DJ Chark for how he played before he arrived here. Big guy, plays small. Does he do any? He doesn't do any of that now. And it all goes back to his decisions after the Cincinnati loss. It is completely neutralized him in his mind. And I think that's why. I think that's why you're seeing a lot of this. I think it's why Urban Meyer has become gun shy to take any sort of command or assert himself into this thing. And I, again, we talked about it at the time. Can he recover from this? Now, they've won two games. They have won two games. They've beaten Buffalo and they've beaten Miami since the Cincinnati error in judgment. But it just comes back to, again, in June you're sitting here ripping a good guy in DJ Chark, who, yeah, you probably were right about a lot of the stuff that you said, but where is that? Where is that? And it's totally gone. He is a NFL head coach that basically, I mean, it just seems like, at least in his mind, feels like he has lost the authority to be that guy that he was in June. And that's unfortunate because whatever this version of Urban Meyer is not going to work. I don't think Shad Khan is going to fire him after this year, even if they lose out. But Urban Meyer has to take a look in the mirror and say, what kind of a head coach do I want to be? This can't feel right for Urban Meyer. There's got to be a voice in Urban Meyer's head every day saying, this isn't who you are. You've got to find a way out of this. And it'll be fascinating to see if he does, because right now his presence gives you absolutely no hope that this is going to get turned around.
What's the best way to take pressure off of a rookie quarterback? Give the ball to your best player. Hand the ball off to your best player. Even before James Robinson's injury, he still never had 20 carries in a game. Still. And after the injury, I certainly understand sharing the ball. But even before he was injured. So the game plan, whether it's Urban's game plan, Darryl Bubba's game plan, or Bermie Parmalee's game plan, whatever it is not working.
We'll take a break. Let's talk more NFL after this, including a fun one tonight. Stay with us.
We're going to get it to Mac Jones, the former Bulls and Alabama quarterback. Quick question for the three gentlemen that I work with. Have you done any Christmas shopping to this point? Frank.
When did we meet?
The answer is clearly no. Hayes.
You know what? I'm about finished.
Oh, my goodness. Wow, that's about impressive. Finished. And Gibby? Yeah.
Yes, I gave Nikki some money. I was like, here, go buy whatever you want this weekend. I was like, I'm slow to this. I need to catch up. Just go get something.
Let me interrupt you just for a second. Where's it? I've got a good group of friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually keep my friends for a long haul.
Yep.
I'm not above ending friendships, though.
True.
Did you just say you're almost done with your Christmas shopping?
I am, amazingly. Thanks to Amazon. Yeah, I have not stepped foot in a store. And I kind of hate to admit this because I know it, like,
that's not shopping local.
I know. But I'm just going to be honest with
shopping
you.
Shopping locally.
I mean,
but you've almost done Christmas shopping.
Yes, because I've been able to order of what I'm going to give my kids, my fiance, my family. I've been able to order. I'll be able to order 95% of it online, and I've ordered all of it online that I've needed though. So there's a couple things. I'll have to run to, like, the liquor store. You know, and stuff like that.
Thank you in advance for my present.
Yeah. but for the most part, yes, I'm finished. And not only am I finished, it's almost all, like, at
wrapped?
The house.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you were going to say wrapped.
Oh, not wrapped. Okay. I'm a gift bag guy.
You think D-Rock could take the job?
Probably.
I mean, I like D-Rock. You like D-Rock?
Yeah, he's good on Jags.
I mean, who's a better guy than D-Rock?
Yeah, he's a
knows
good
the
guy.
Jags. He just saw him in L.A., travels the game. You think?
Yeah, I think he'll take it.
I think he'd be magnificent.
You got his number?
I do.
Just send him a text. I don't want to commit anything yet. Yeah. But say, D-Rock, in the event that, you know,
sure.
I don't know.
I was texting with him yesterday.
Hayes leaves for a job in Toledo.
Right.
Would you be interested?
Okay.
Just get back to me. Oh, Christmas shopping. I've never seen anything affect a friendship so significantly like this.
For the record, I have a Secret Santa next week, and that's the only present that I've purchased for my Secret Santa. I've purchased absolutely nothing for anyone else in my life.
Our favorite narrative in the family, I only shop for Suzanne. She shops for everybody else. I generally go, I don't know, 22nd, 23rd of December.
But it was always Christmas Eve.
Sometimes that. And then and you know what I get? My favorite phrase of all time? You wait till it's all picked over. Picked over is the phrase. Why do you wait till it's all picked? You don't like it? No, I like it, but you wait till it's all picked over. So, no, I haven't started my Christmas shopping. Are you kidding me? It's December 6th.
I understand it's very early, but Gibby played that music, so I had to ask the question. All right, let's talk a little bit about Mac Jones, the quarterback of the New England Patriots. His completion percentage, Frank, is just over 70%. He's got 16 touchdowns and 8 interceptions, and his Patriots take on the Bills tonight.
My take when he was playing really well was, and this isn't a comparing Mac to Trevor, because that's not what this conversation is. This is a conversation about Mac Jones, a Jacksonville kid who played at Alabama and almost won the Heisman, and that was a very good NFL quarterback in his first year. But my first take was the huge advantage he had was playing with for Belichick, for Josh McDaniels, and I still think that's a big factor, okay? But you know what? I'm now starting to think more of it is, or just as much of it is, how freaking good this guy is. This is, you know who he kind of is? There's a little Joe Montana in there. He's not Brady. People say he's Brady, not Brady. There's some Joe Montana in there. Do you see that at all?
Yeah, I think that's a good call.
He's about the same size, good arm, not rifle arm.
It's the brain.
But the brain, the understanding, the knack, the instinct, and the accuracy. The accuracy is part of it too. But the knack, the understanding, the ability to process. It's unreal how good he's been. Boy, that's going to be a fun one tonight now. It's unreal how good he's been this early. And it's time we quit making excuses. Well, it's because he's with Belichick and he's with Josh. No, he's really, really good as a rookie quarterback.
Yeah, the NFL normally chews the rookies up and spits them out.
Yes.
And we all wait until their second year and say, okay, now maybe they'll have figured things out. Maybe the game will have slowed down a little bit. But Hayes, I saw over the weekend Kirk Herbstreit saying, you know, when I interviewed Mac Jones in detail last year, I walked away saying he will be an excellent NFL quarterback right away because of his elite processing ability. He has the best processing ability of any quarterback I've talked to in a handful of years, and he was sold. And I think some people miss that. Somehow NFL scouts miss that because he was not picked until, 15th by the Patriots?
Yeah, and again, what a mistake by the San Francisco 49ers to trade everything that they traded
right.
to move up to get Trey Lance
yeah.
when initially everybody thought it was to get Mac Jones. You know, we'll see as time goes on if that looks like the colossal blunder that it does right now. You know, but the thing, I will say this. If you flipped it and put Trevor Lawrence in New England and Mac Jones here, you'd see a difference.
Well, no question.
I mean,
and I'm not,
I do think a lot of it is your environment.
Yeah,
Trevor's in the worst environment in the NFL, and that's not a knock on Jaguars fans at all. That is a complete knock on the organization of the franchise. Particularly, it's a knock on Urban Meyer, who thought it'd be a good idea to have him split reps with Gardner Minshew for the first month of training camp.
It helped Minshew.
It helped Minshew. Yeah, he was sharp. Didn't help this organization a lot. And just the overall talent. So I do think if Mac Jones played here, he would be hovering somewhere around 9 touchdowns and 7 picks and not a lot of wins and not a lot of success. And I think if Trevor Lawrence was in New England, he would be the unquestioned offensive rookie of the year. So I do think environment plays a large part in it. But Mac Jones has taken full advantage of the resources around him. He's played great football, and I think he's going to have an outstanding career. But again, I still look at it as the path. It's almost like if you're running a track meet, and you always the further out you are, you get that advantage. To me, it's almost like they're running a 4-lap race. And Mac Jones started on the third lap of the race, being drafted by the Patriots. Trevor Lawrence started laying face down on the track and having to run the full race.
Yeah, and in my case, I wasn't comparing them. I'm just
No, I know.
Yeah,
but I do think it makes – think it would make a startling difference.
Yeah. And I'm not debating, regardless of whether the current circumstance is hurting Trevor or not, would – take that off the table for a second. Does the current circumstance help Mac? No question. The guy's got 6 rings, you know. Many of those with Josh McDaniels is his right hand. So clearly a young player will benefit from that environment. There's no debating that. But my point is, I've so focused on that, and I think so many have, it's time at least for me to focus on how good this guy is, not just how the environment's helped him, because I think it has. I agree with you. He's really good, man. He is a really good player. And it's the instinct, the smarts. That doesn't mean he's not going to make a bad play at some point. And the reason he's Montana, to me, is Montana never got his due until he was great. because he wasn't big and strong-armed like Marino and Elway. Marino and Elway are both 6'4", rifle arms, lightning quick release, could throw it through a wall. Montana was never that. He's 6'2", maybe. Average arm at best, would you say? I mean, at best, average arm. You know, he Drew Brees. He was Drew Brees. Well, now Drew Brees gets all the credit, but it would have been Drew Brees being compared to Manning and Brady. That was Montana being compared to Elway and Marino. It was the same thing. You're not going to get the credit that the big strong arm guy gets, and I think that's what Mac Jones is. It is a, you know, I mean, I remember we weren't that far. We're not that far removed from Mac leaving Bowles, having an offer to go to Kentucky. People telling him he's lost his mind by going to Alabama, and then it looking like he's going to be a career holder. The only time you saw Mac is when he held. And he was the backup. Hurts was there, and Tua was the backup. And then Tua beat out Hurts, and then Hurts was going to leave, and then Tua was the quarterback. And all during that, you know what Mac did? He held. I'm going to hold for the kicks, right? That's what he was, the holder. And then, okay, now Hurts is gone, but it's going to be Tua. And now little Tua Talia is going to be right behind him, and Mac will get caught in a minute, and Bryce Young's coming at some point. And he was never supposed to play. It was very similar to Trask. Very similar to Trask. And you know what? I'll bet you, when Trask plays, it'll be similar. You agree with that?
I do, especially because of where he's going. Where Trask is with the Bucks, I mean, that's a franchise that knows how to win and a franchise that's going to groom him the right way.
Yeah, but I think – I'm not saying he'll be as good as Mac Jones has been. You agree? I think Trask is going to be very good when he plays. You agree? You're not so sure, are you?
I'm not so sure about Trask. I think he'll have a long career, but I think he's more of a backup. Yeah. I think Mac Jones is significantly better.
And to your credit, you said that all along too. So we'll see.
By the way, the Patriots were 7-9 last year with wins over the Cardinals and the Ravens and the Chargers. The team that he went to, as much as we talked about how down they were because they didn't have Tom Brady anymore, they had a ton of opt-outs, and so now their defense is ridiculously good, as of course it was going to be because it's under Belichick and they got their guys back. And he stepped into a situation where, right, Josh McDaniels has a really good scheme. All of that, you know, laid out for them to be a much better team than most other teams that rookies were going to.
Yeah, yeah, and all that's true. But I do find myself thinking he is a better player, A, than I thought he would be, B, than I thought he was even early on.
Who wins tonight? We didn't put it in the pick, so you can just
what was games in Buffalo?
Mm-hmm, in Buffalo.
Buffalo wins tonight. But I think it's a fun game.
Yeah, I think Buffalo wins. Low scoring.
I think Buffalo wins, but I think
we'll take the Patriots just so it's fun. Yeah.
What about the mania yesterday?
It's what he does.
Give him credit. Yeah. You know, it is what he does. I mean, well, he was, 11 out of 11? Finished 20-24 or something like that?
Yeah.
And they win. Now, yeah. You know,
it looks like to have a really good tight end, by the way.
More field goals than touchdowns. But he led them on, what, 8 straight scoring drives? Is that what it was?
He was nearly flawless. Yeah. I mean, he played great. And that's what he's done.
Is he better than Jalen Hurts?
Jalen Hurts has played pretty well. So they're just so I would rather have Jalen Hurts than Gardner Minshew if I was starting a club.
Yeah, Minshew will be good for a couple games. Then teams will have the extra tape on him, and then he'll go right back.
They already got tape on him, though, don't they?
Yeah, but not in that offense and not with those players. Okay. Have the Jaguars ever had a tight end like Dallas Goedert?
No. Yeah. No, I hear you. I hear you. So he's pretty good, though. And maybe you're right. Maybe his career is be the really good backup. That if he's on a really good team and the really good starter on the really good team gets hurt, the really good backup comes in and they don't lose too much. Maybe that's what he'll be.
He's going to get, whenever this rookie contract is, I guess he's got one more year in it. He's going to get a 2-year, $16 million. I don't think he's going to get the kind of deal where we've seen like a Matt Flynn or a Schaub or, I don't think he's going to get a, hey, come be our guy contract. But he's going to start, he's going to be this generation's Chase Daniel. I mean, he is going to make an obscene amount of money in his career. He's going to play for 14 years and be making, you know, $8 to $10 million every year because he's going to be one of the best backups because every time he goes in, he gives that to you. I mean, you talk about brain. I mean, Gardner Minshew's
really
football
smart,
IQ
really
is,
smart player.
I mean, Einstein-esque.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's certainly helped by the players around him. And I'm sure also looking up, he was really glad that he didn't play for this team yesterday.
Yeah. So, but it you and I did think it was cool at the end how excited he was, the video with he and his dad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's an emotional guy. Say what you want about Gardner Minshew, and did he get a little too caught up in the mania? Sure he did. But regardless of, he's a nice kid, and it was sad to see him go from king of the town to so not the king of the town so quickly that if he got to be king for a day yesterday.
He was Maverick.
Yeah. I mean, he was Maverick. That was kind of a cool thing. Let's take a break. Let's keep it on the Jaguars. John Osher joins us in a bit. By phone, John's contact tracing this week. But he'll join us by phone for one segment. We'll talk Jags and Rams and a whole lot more, so stay with us.
Now it's time for the O Show with John Osher from Jaguars.com.
Johnny O joins us now. He is from home. He is contact tracing. John is fine, and will be back with us in studio in a week or so. Johnny, how you doing there, buddy?
Oh, yeah, I'm fine, Frank. I'm just fine. I am just fine. Couldn't be more fine.
Yeah, well, I want to explain to people that you're not sick. That's kind of what I wanted to do.
No, I got you.
Hey, all right, where do we start? Let me start with James Robinson. That seems to be the narrative. The narrative is out there that people want to know why he isn't playing as much as Carlos Hyde. Is he being punished for fumbles? Is it because he's injured? Urban Meyer has spoke about that a couple times. Today was interesting, John. We talked about this on the program a minute ago. Someone asked him, why was he in late in the game if he's injured? And Urban said, good question.
Yeah.
And he was also asked, is he being penalized for mistakes? And Urban said, well, not by me. Both of those lead to believe that Urban has turned that decision-making over to Daryl Bevel, Bernie Parmalee, or whoever, and isn't certain that he agrees with that decision-making. Can you shed any light on that?
Yeah, no. I mean, I can only shed the light that I've seen. I was sort of interpreting the press conference the same way. Urban also said that he was asked, would he be more involved? And I'm paraphrasing the answer, but the gist was, yeah, because he wants to make sure it's being done the way he wants it done. So I expect it to be a topic all week. It'll be closely watched next week, providing James Robinson plays. You know, as we all know, Urban is very much the guy who delegates these decisions to the position coach. When he came in, position coaches, he talked about the staff. It was clear the position coaches were going to own their position. It sounds like they have. It's been as strange a topic and as strange an issue to try to get your head around as any I can remember. Frank, I wish I had a better answer for why it's played out. It's been confusing to try to interpret.
John, in terms of the five games coming up, what in your opinion would represent a realistic amount of positive progress at this point without all the bad football that we've witnessed?
Yeah, a lot of questions, not a lot of great answers, Hayes. Progress, you'd like to see more offensively. You've also got a team that scored 10 points a game over their last six games after scoring 19 for their first six games. I don't know that the issues that have caused that 10 points a game to happen are going to get fixed. Urban said today, hey, it's not on all the receivers, meaning, you know, we've been beating this receiver thing to death for the last 4 or 5 weeks. But I don't know how the offense gets better without being able to make plays downfield. And the plays downfield aren't there, and when they are there, they're not getting made. I don't know if that changes. You'd love to see 20, 24 points a game over the last five games and better offensive production. I can't say that I think that's going to happen the way this team's playing right now. So what's progress? I don't know, figure out a way to win a couple and feel better about it. I can't say that I think it's going to happen.
John, how did you think Jay Tufele played? Because I'm trying to find some bright spots in the youth.
Yeah, I mean, not anything that I noticed. I haven't really asked specifically about Tufele. It looked like the defense, overall, the defense, I think, played well for a half, and then it got beaten down by the offensive inefficiency, meaning six three and outs out of seven drives is what the offense had early, put tremendous strain on the defense. So a specific guy in terms of Tufele, Urban said today he played hard. it didn't sound like he was praising how he played. But, you know, as we would say in the coaching business, I'll have more on that.
But you did hit it, though. You just described the narrative that's been the narrative for a couple months now.
Too long.
Defense plays pretty well. Not great, but pretty well. Hangs in there. Offense has a bunch of three and outs. The defense finally caves in. That's what happened. It's happened almost every game. I thought yesterday, honestly, John, at one point it's 13-7. It's late in the half. The defense is scrapping and clawing. If the offense could have just put together one more drive, you know, take a 14-13 lead and get the ball coming out, and you know what? The narrative changes a bit. I don't know what they do. Let me say this. To Lauren's question, do you just say now, screw it, we are going to play Andre Cisco more than the eight plays, which was his season high. We are going to play Jay Tefele some. We are going to take our young guys and stick them in there. I mean, from a win-loss standpoint, it's not going to change. You're losing every game. And I'm not trying to be frivolous about this, but do you incrementally play young players even more?
Well, I wrote, maybe it was today, it all kind of runs together, that there does come a time for a struggling team that's in this situation where you do want to see the young draft pick, even if it has to go against the coach's instinct of, I'm not going to put a guy out there who's not better than the guy in front of him. But realistically, I would say Tufele, Walker, Little, and Cisco. Beyond that, I don't know that there's any guys who really fit that. I don't know if you're going to pull up practice squad guys who you're sure aren't as good as your top guys.
Right.
So I do think you've reached that time now where with five games left, you sort of have to trump that and say, we need to see these guys. You know, they want to get a couple of wins. Urban said that today. I'd like to win number one. I've got to think that time is coming because you've got to see what Walker Little, Andre Cisco are.
What chance do you give them Sunday in Nashville?
Well, Hayes, what chance do you give?
Nil.
No, I mean, and I'm not trying to be cute about it. Against the Titans, I think it's the same issue as against the Rams. But I do think there's going to be games where the Jaguars compete into the fourth quarter this year, the Jets, the Texans. You're on the road against a team that really is motivated and needs to win. It's what the Rams were. So, realistically, I'm just always a big believer that motivation matters in the NFL in December. The more motivated team usually comes out on top. I'm sure it'll be cold in Nashville. It's going to be hard to play a physical team. It's hard to see the Jaguars withstanding that for four quarters when you're coming off a couple of games where, as Frank alluded to, I think that's the theme of the season right now. The defense plays okay. Yesterday didn't feel like a defensive effort that was bad. It felt like a defensive effort where they had given all they had to give, and then it stopped. It's hard to see that not being the case against Tennessee the way Tennessee played.
John, based off of how bad everything's going, do you expect that we'll see a different side of Trevor Lawrence, or do you think he's going to remain the same calm guy?
Oh, I think he is who he is. I mean, I would be surprised if you mean like anger in a press conference, throwing people under the bus, anger on the sidelines. I don't know that he's yell at you guy. I guess he's never had anything but success, so it's obviously a fair question. But I've never heard anything that he's like not a what you see is what you get with him. So I'd be surprised if you see anything that's not this, because I think he's a genuine kid.
I'm reaching a little bit here because that's what we've got. But when we first saw Dan Arnold, there was something there, more than there's been with any of the tight ends catching balls around here in a while. I think there's a little something with Laquon Treadwell, and I don't know I'm reaching. He's not a super fast guy. He was a street free agent. I get it. But at least he looks to me, John, like a seasoned volume receiver, not a guy trying to play out there. I think I would probably involve him more. I know I'm reaching a little bit, but I think there's a little something there.
Yeah, in the last five games, I mean, he certainly looks like a guy who it seems like Trevor knows where he's going to be.
Right.
I think that's key. He looks reliable. He looks like he's still playing hard. There's some physicality. again, I'm not sure that he, in an ideal situation, is one of your top three receivers. Could he play well enough where you feel good about him as a fifth guy next year, or as a reserve? I guess what I'm trying to say is he seems like a really reliable reserve NFL receiver right now. That's okay for what he's going to be. He's worked hard to get to that point. He doesn't solve your speed issue, but sure, play him more. I don't know that there's a better alternative.
Are you surprised that Trevor and LaVisca have so little chemistry at this point?
Yeah, I am, because I thought LaVisca would be more this year. I don't think you can discount the situation that they're both in, meaning I think the vision was to have LaVisca as the slot guy and not having to provide deep speed. I don't know that there's very much room for him to operate underneath and do what they want him to do. Everything feels so condensed. I know people get tired of hearing that, but when you can't hit anything deep and teams are taking that away easily, LaVisca Chenault's supposed to operate underneath and break tackles of smaller guys. Right now, he's forced to play in this condensed field, and I think it's just sort of got everything sort of broken on that front. So I'd like to see more out of him. I guess considering the circumstances, I'm not shocked that it's played out this way, considering the kind of receiver he is.
John, any news on Brandon Linder or any of the other guys that were injured yesterday?
Not off the presser today, and that's really where we're at with it. It sounds like Tyson Campbell okay going forward. Barch missed some plays late. It sounds like he's okay going forward, but Brandon Linder, to my knowledge, was not discussed during that today.
We'll see what happens. By the way, high 52, low 40, 32, by the way. Ooh. In Nashville on Sunday, John. So there you go.
Cold enough to be a factor, Frank.
Cold enough to be a factor. Johnny O checking in contact tracing this week. He'll be back in studio with us next week. John, we appreciate it, buddy. Take care, man.
All right, guys. Thanks for being flexible. I appreciate it.
No problem. That is the O Show. Johnny O checking in, talking Jaguars with us. More in a moment. This is 1010 XL and 92.5 FM. Here's a shocker for you. Joe Brady fired. You see that?
That was surprising. Based off of the quarterback issues that they've had, Christian McCaffrey's been injured a bunch for Carolina. I was really surprised to see that.
Is there something in the Nocatee water? I mean, you're kind of his agent.
Yes.
You've now started Christmas shopping early, which has ended right. The friendship.
I've even already bought Joe Brady's gift.
Done all your shopping. Yeah. What do you make of that? It's surprising.
I was really surprised. Yeah. I think Joe Brady's really talented. And, you know, but Matt Rhule is feeling the pressure. They got off to a nice start and have really crumbled. And, you know, there's probably a difference in opinion on what they should be doing offensively moving forward. And Matt Rhule thought one thing and Joe Brady thought another. And Matt Rhule said, okay, thank you for your service. You're fired. And that happens. I don't think it, you know, means Joe Brady is never going to be heard from again. I think Joe Brady will go on and do some really great things, whether that's at the collegiate or pro level. But as Lauren mentioned, he's been dealt a tough hand. I mean, McCaffrey was injured last year mm-hmm. as well for a good bit. So if you're Joe Brady in 2 years, it is funny how 2 years ago, Ed Ogeron wins the national championship. Joe Brady's like the greatest assistant ever.
Of all time.
And they're both fired.
Right,
like
right.
In different spots, but both fired. You know, but McCaffrey was injured both his years. His quarterbacks have been, I don't even remember who it was last year. It was Darnold this year. Last year,
he was the Patriots last year.
Bridgewater, that's right. So, you know, I mean, it's hard for me to make any concrete judgment that, you know.
You want him here, Hayes?
Well, yeah, but I mean, I don't think that's going to appeal to Joe Brady.
I think he winds up in college because that's where he became a megastar. Now, that doesn't mean that he's ticketed to do it forever, but I think that's where he becomes a megastar. I sense that.
I mean, college would certainly make sense just based off of his experience being so minimal now with the Panthers and being fired. But, look, I mean, if he wants to be, I think, an offensive coordinator at one of these jobs that just opened up, if I'm hiring or if I'm the head, you know, new head coach, I would hire him.
Yeah, I am. I would think he's going to want what getting fired did is it slowed his train to head coach. Now he's got to go be a coordinator again. Again, I would think probably at the college level. and kind of do what he did with that LSU team to get a chance to get. But it did surprise me a little bit. The college game, did you see the Kenny Pickett fake slide?
Oh, yeah.
What did you think of that?
I think it's legal. Maybe it shouldn't be. Maybe it's something they should look at, but it's a savvy move. I mean, you're able to do it. So I think it's something that they should probably take a look at. I would understand if you're Wake Forest, why you would be upset.
Because there's nothing you can do.
Because there's really nothing you can do. I mean, you've got to slow. When you see that hip dip, like he's going to slide, you've automatically got to break down and sort of stop your momentum. And then, obviously, when he just keeps running, it's difficult. So I commend Pickett. You know, there's nothing – what he did is a legal move, and it had a lot of savvy and brilliance to it. It was a huge play. But I do think it's something that – and I don't know at the collegiate level if it – I don't know if they call it competition committee like they do in the NFL. But it should be something that I think is looked at. I think if the quarterback starts to slide, the play should be over. He shouldn't. That's not a maneuver that you want to have a fake on, because the intent of the rule is to protect the quarterback. And if the defender is going to think, well, maybe he's faking it and take him out. Which is the next step. So I think they need to step in. It's similar to the – it's kind of a dumb rule, but the helmet rule. The helmet comes off, you got to stop. That's just there can be no gray area because somebody could get really hurt. So
you shouldn't be flagged.
So you just
if
have
your
to
helmet
stop.
Comes off and you score a touchdown.
Right. And I get it. But I at least understand why. Yeah. Why it's got to be so black and white. And I think on this they need to go and adjust it so it doesn't become something that you're seeing, you know, 8 or 9 times a week. But, you know, again, I commend Pickett for it. It's similar to Terrell Buckley sort of faked the fair catch and just stood there and then broke it. I think it's brilliant football.
Yeah. I mean, I think Wake Forest defense was getting clobbered, so I don't think that one play really would have changed the game. They lost 45-21 to Pitt. But yeah. If this started to become a thing, then they should take a look at it. I don't think we've talked about this once already or once at all this year.
Yeah, I think they got to look at it. I don't think it changes that game. But the biggest problem is it's going to get a quarterback hurt because another quarterback's going to get drilled when he really is sliding. Now a defensive guy's going to get to him before he slides. So you got to be careful of that. What do you think about the bowls? Any bowls grab you? Florida, UCF, you like it?
I do like
the Gasparilla
it.
Bowl?
I like the location, you know, being in Tampa.
They'll sell it out, by the way, between the two schools.
I think that
will be a sold-out bowl.
Yeah, I think it's good for Florida. I don't agree with the, well, Florida can't win in this matchup regardless because if they beat UCF, well, you're supposed to, and if you lose, it's a disaster because I don't see it that way. I think it motivates Florida to stay in Tampa, to face an in-state school. So I think it's a good matchup for the Gators. And here's the other part of it. I don't think UCF's any good at all. I mean, this isn't playing, you know, Fiesta Bowl UCF. You know, this isn't playing Phantom National Champion UCF. This is, a pretty average UCF team. So I think, you know, Florida's a 7-point favorite. I think they should be a 7-point favorite.
Yeah, the bowls that interest me are the ones where the coaches are still there. Or like
all
Ohio
three of
State.
Them.
Yeah, exactly. Ohio State, Utah, I think will be a really fun Rose Bowl. Both coaches are still there, so they have something to play for. Yeah, Some of these bowl games, I feel like the Oklahoma matchup, Oklahoma doesn't care at this point.
The New Year's Six games are good games. I mean,
Oklahoma, Oregon, because neither coach is there.
Yeah, but I think that'll be a fun game. I think the New Year's Six games are good. I like Florida UCF. I agree with you. There's no longer the, well, if you lose, you can. I mean, you're not. The world's changed. They're two football programs now. And look, you got to beat 40-17 by South Carolina. Nothing that happens here is going to be worse than that.
Right.
Yeah. So I mean, and it'll be a fun game. And I do think it'll sell out. I think every seat will be sold. I think the Florida fans, between the Florida and UCF has a good following. So between the Florida and UCF fans that all live in that corridor, I think that game will sell out.
And it helps that it's a Thursday night game at 7 o'clock, so people can get to it. It's not one of those, you know, day games or what have you.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I think it's gonna be a blast. I think it'll be a Thursday nighter and holidays. A lot of people aren't working then. A lot of people are off the next day because it's a Christmas Eve. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. Gator Bowl, Wake Forest in Texas A&M. Not bad. We'll have Greg in here to talk more about that tomorrow. But it's not. I mean, it's two ranked teams. I wish Wake Forest had more name value. I wish this was number 17 North Carolina had the season Wake Forest had, you know. But it's not a bad game. I don't mind it at all.
I think it's a good matchup. You know, again, I'd like to know the last time they got two ranked teams. That feels like it's been a while. And Wake Forest, the only problem with Wake Forest, in addition to the lack of pizzazz in the name, is they've struggled down the stretch. And those teams are always a little and A&M obviously lost to LSU. But A&M has – you've got a team that beat Alabama here, and then you've got a team that had scored 35 points in every game for, what, their first 10 or 11 games, you know, something like that. So should be really entertaining. And, again, I love the spot that they're in. You watch the Gator Bowl, and then you slide into the first semifinal against Cincinnati, Alabama, and then you make it a great triple header with the Dogs versus the Maize and Blue.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, Wake, especially Sam Hartman, your guy, Frank, at least from this weekend, four picks
right.
That in an ACC.
But he threw me two touchdowns, which kept me from going to Bono. So he kept me out in lunch.
That he did. And thanks again to Bono's on Bowden Road because the food was fabulous.
Oh, it was good.
And Frank, I know you had not eaten since yesterday, so you really needed it. But anyway, the Baylor Ole Miss game, I think that's another fun one.
Yeah, I do too. I think it's really fun. Who do you think's going to win the Heisman? Heisman votes are in now. Who's going to win the Heisman?
It's going to be Bryce Young. It should be Bryce
Young. Is it a landslide, do you think?
I think so. And again, I'll give you an underrated play from that game. That fumble he recovers, I don't know how he got that fumble.
And it rips his arm out. Yeah.
And again, that's not why he's going to win the Heisman. But if he doesn't get that and he shouldn't have gotten it, I don't know where that game goes from that point.
They're going to announce the finalists in about a half an hour. Who do you think gets to New York?
I think that's a tough question outside of Bryce Young.
Hutchinson.
Aiden Hutchinson from Michigan. I would agree with that.
Corral?
I'll say no.
Kenneth Walker?
Pickett will go. That's three.
Pickett? They can have anywhere between three and five.
I think they announced it's going to be four.
Okay, they did say four.
Yeah.
Okay. If it's going to be four, Bryce Young for sure, Hutchinson for sure. I would predict Corral and
Pickett.
You're sure on Pickett, huh?
I think Pickett's going.
Corral and Pickett?
I feel like Kenneth Walker lost a lot of steam.
Yeah.
What about William Zapka?
Oh, Zapka and
56 touchdowns passing this year.
Matt Bonner. William Zapka goes head to head.
Didn't Pickett pass like Dan Marino this weekend?
Yeah.
At Pitt?
Oh, maybe.
Yeah.
I can tell you my guy,
like
William Zapka, might break Joe Burrow's NCAA record if he throws
Stroud
five in the bowl game.
Might be there in New York.
I'm going to predict.
He might be ahead.
What about
of
the.
I'm going to predict the four to be Young. I'm going to predict Pickett won't be there. I'm going to predict Young, Hutchinson, Corral, Walker. That's my prediction.
And what about Will Anderson, the linebacker from Alabama?
Yeah, I don't think the defensive guy will get there. No, I don't think one of the defensive guys is going to get
Vegas
there.
Vegas odds are Bryce Young, Aiden Hutchinson, Kenny Pickett, and C.J. Stroud.
Okay. Oh, really? Okay, so maybe I'm wrong. We'll see what winds up happening. I'll take a break. 1 second to go. We'll have it for you. We'll wrap up this Monday program after this, so stay with us. Very nice. Very nice Christmas tune. Hey,
is Bruce?
You have to listen. Keep listening.
Yep.
Uh-oh. I might have given it away, you think?
I heard the saxophone.
Oh, yeah. I may be able to do a show now. I may have to listen to this. We always love our conversations during the break, Hayes. I think they're some of the best ones.
Yes.
I think maybe the best conversation we had during the break a minute ago, Brooke says, hey, we haven't mentioned the picks yet.
Is that because she did well?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, hey, we haven't mentioned the
picks
yet.
Last week or the week before, we got to a break and you were like, oh, I never mentioned that. We got to the end of the show. You're like, I never mentioned the picks results. I meant to do that. And so I was just making sure that you didn't forget today.
You didn't want me to make the same mistake twice.
Correct. I am here for you. I am a friend.
You are that.
A mentor at times.
There's no question. So the picks last week, Lauren Brooks was 5-1.
She had the pick of the year.
The dang Ravens, by the way, ruined my perfect picks week.
She had two game picker uppers and a money ball. She had an 8-point week.
That's impressive.
And I thought that might be the first 8-point week ever. Well, it's not because Brooks also researched that for us. And hang on, I'm going to find out the other. You said there was another 8-point week.
I did find another 8-point week.
Well, I'm going to look it up. Right. I record every week.
It was not me.
It was not.
Gibby on October 9th.
Oh, was it me?
Gibby on October 9th
yep.
Was 6-0 with the game picker up around the money ball, so he had an 8-point week. Very good. Very good. The Very, very nicely done. That's, on October 9th, there was those 8-point. How many sevens have we had? Hayes had a seven, right?
You've had a seven.
I had a seven on October 23rd.
Yep. You've had a seven, and Frank, I mean, and Hayes has
Hayes had one on November 13th, and Gibby had one on November 20th. Yeah. So, man, right. So here's how it went. Lauren was 5-1. She only missed the Ravens Steelers, 8 total points. Hayes and Gibby were both 3-3, both with 4 total points. They had the money ball. I was 2-4. I had the worst week with 3 total points. Now it's gotten closer to the top, Carline. I give you credit. I thought, you know, honestly, I had emptied my bench. You know, I was playing the walk-ons. Okay, now, well, I had to put the starters back in. I didn't expect that because I had a 10. When I had a 10-point lead, I thought I was pretty secure. You have narrowed that lead to 6. Okay, so I am now 51-33 overall, 61 total points. Hayes Carline for the bowl school, 45-39, 55 total points, and everybody's still in it. Gibby is 45-39 with 53 points. Lauren 44-40. Congratulations for being over 500, by the way.
Thank you.
53 total points. So it's 61, 55, 53, 53. Can I say anybody's game? Is that possible?
What are Gibby's and Lauren's?
53.
We're tied They're at both 53. At 53.
Yeah.
So we're two points behind you, Hayes.
Wow, yeah. That's
matchup. It's anybody's ball. I mean, again, starters are back in.
Yeah.
You know, the walk-on's parents are all upset. They were getting to play, and now they had to come back out. So,
well, this is what you get for having Bobby Pruitt as your defensive coordinator.
It is. 61, 55, 53, 53. On money balls, I'm 8-3. Gibby 7-4. You guys are both 6-5. How about this on game picker uppers? Lauren has made up some ground. Now I've got 7. Hayes has 6. Lauren has 5 now. Gibby, only one game picker upper for you. That hadn't been your strength this year. So
I just appreciate all of you picking Florida State against Florida and all of you picking Georgia.
So happy to help.
There you go. The Bengals versus the Chargers.
So there you go. So those are our picks. It's getting close now. We'll do our picks to the end of the NFL regular season. But we'll now be transitioning
unless Frank's losing, and then we will extend it to
correct.
The Super Bowl,
right? Or spring training, okay?
Or the, I don't think
I've got the twins,
or the NBA finals. we do it to the end of the NFL regular season. But we'll start doing six for the most part 6 NFL games.
That's true, but like you said, we'll have a loser Monday with
loser
bowls.
Monday with bowls. So William Zabka and Matt Bonner can rear their heads again. So there's that.
I thoroughly enjoyed the quarterback contest over the weekend for Loser Monday. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun picking a bunch of players that none of our listeners have ever heard of.
The rules are what they are.
That's right.
It's actually not true because I went to a party Saturday night and I overheard this guy saying, yeah, my team really, I think, got beat today. I went to San Diego State and I was like, oh, yes, unfortunately, I know exactly what happened. You lost to Utah State 46-13. And he looked at me like, how the hell does this girl know what happened in Utah State, San Diego State?
Good
I didn't
point.
Tell him the reason why I know.
Good
I just
point.
Will let him think I'm a genius.
Well, that's a good adjustment. So of 1.2 million people in Jacksonville, one person has heard of the quarterbacks we did last week. Okay, so there's now one that has heard of that. So we'll probably not quite wander there again.
I didn't see myself regretting not picking Stetson Bennett.
I hear you. So, yeah, again, like I told you guys, the original plan was I should have stuck to my plan. We've got 5 games plus the Gibby game, and that's what we're picking from. And that would have given us 12 quarterbacks, and we all pick one of the three of the 12. So,
well, Gibby would have lost still because he picked Jay Sprite.
Oh, there you go. So the
and Spencer Sanders would have been in there too.
Yeah, but Matt Bonner wouldn't have been involved. Neither would William
Just
Zabka.
Just teasing you, Gibby.
By the way, so when Frank spoke out of turn and said Ritter already, I blame one of you guys who was next because I would have picked Ritter the very next guy.
That's exactly. Yeah, I did.
My turn wasn't up yet. I would have picked him.
Well, I had to get Frank Harris from Texas San Antonio. And guess what? He delivered.
Wait a minute. I knew William Zabka. Okay. I knew Matt Bonner.
You didn't know Franco Harris?
I didn't know Franco Harris was dog quarterback, too.
And Denny Crum. And Kent State gave me one. I wasn't overly thrilled, but he got me one, and that's all I needed.
Let's kind of wrap up. What a busy, crazy weekend. The carousel. How will Miami be now?
Good.
Cristobal is going to be the coach. Again, I'm still holding out hope that my buddy Gino Toretta's got a chance. I know he's in it, but if Dan Radakovich wants it, it sounds like they're going to pay him $3 million, which would make him the highest paid AD in America.
Does Miami have the best coach of the big three in Florida?
They have I don't know that because the reality is he hasn't done along enough for me to be convinced he's better than Norvell or Napier yet. I think what you have are three sort of quasi unknowns on the national landscape. None of them have done anything. He's done more significant He's been in a Power Five. He's been successful in a Power Five conference.
Right.
The other two have not. But we'll see. We'll see. Am I convinced? Am I convinced he's going to be better than Billy Napier 5 years from now? No, I'm not convinced the other way either. And I'm not convinced that Mike Norvell won't be in that conversation. I like Norvell. I like what he's done with that program. But that's the charm of it. Your question's a great one, Lauren. That's the charm of it is who is 5 years from now? How many between Mike Norvell, Billy Napier, Mario Cristobal, how many of them, number one, will still have the job?
Yeah, whose buyouts have been paid?
Yeah, in this day and age, right? Whose buyouts? And by the way, FSU has a AD opening. I was hoping Jeff Purinton would get it. Jeff Purinton is associate AD at Alabama, FSU grad, came through the World of Sports Information. Do you know Jeff at all?
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful guy, and he's interested. There's been some social media buzz about him.
Yeah.
What I've seen, FSU is closing in on hiring Vince Tyra.
Yeah, Tyra's the guy that probably it looks like they want. But Purinton's in it. But Tyra, they have targeted Tyra the same way Miami has targeted Radakovich.
Tell me about Tyra.
He came out of nowhere to be the Louisville guy. But what I don't know is, was he in the middle of all the Patino stuff and the Petrino stuff? Or did he get there after? I don't know enough. I don't know. I'd be guessing. But they've had some real controversy there. Between all the Patino stuff and the stripper and the restaurant, and pick your Patino story you want.
Mm-hmm.
And did he hire both those guys? Did he hire neither of those guys? I'm surprised he's that highly thought of that FSU has gone after him that strongly. And again, there may be stuff about him I don't know, but it is interesting. But I did see where he's the guy.
He started there in March of 2018.
Then he might have been after all that.
Yeah, I think he replaced.
Oh, you know, that's right.
Yeah,
Tom Jurich was there. That's right. Jurich, legendary AD. I forgot about that. He replaced Tom Jurich. That's what it was. So Jurich hired both those guys, and Tyra maybe came in there to clean it up.
And okay. Tyra was a pitcher at Kentucky from 85 to 88.
Oh, so he's a younger guy as far as in that world, huh? Okay, very interesting.
I do think what you're saying, it's really unique because it seems like the fans of the Big Three all love their guy.
Right.
Now I would debate whether FSU should love their guy, but
right.
It seems like they're behind him. I think Florida for the most part is I think Napier's approval rating is probably somewhere in the 80s.
I think it's very high.
I think Cristobal's will be
higher.
Yeah, in the 90s.
Yeah.
And his introductory press conference is tomorrow morning at 10 a.m.
Cristobal's
for Canes fans.
Yeah.
Yep, Cristobal's.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if I was ranking them, I'd say Cristobal, Napier, Norvell.
Yeah.
But I do think it's an intriguing mix now because you've got, I think, everybody in the state kind of likes their guy and is going to go to battle for their guy. Florida State's the only one that I don't know if there's any sort of, you know, tepidness with how they view Mike Norvell, particularly since he lost to the Gators, but it seems like they're behind him.
The other thing interesting about those hires is, would anybody been jazzed up about any of those hires 3 years ago?
No.
I mean, Cristobal, Miami could have had him for way less 3 years ago when they hired Manny. They could have had him.
Oh yeah.
He would have he would have crawled to Miami to take that job, and they had no interest in him. Now all of a sudden he's their guy. They couldn't wait to get him. Billy Napier wasn't landing a job like Florida.
No.
When Dan Mullen got it, now all of a sudden, yeah. But again, they're building. All three guys, particularly the last two, and I think Norvell too, are program builders. They're not X's and O's guys. They are program builders, and I can tell you the reputation for Cristobal and Napier is all world recruiter. That's it. Go get the players. That if that has been a clear weakness of Florida for a long time, one thing Scott Strickland said is let's go get it. I said this before. Scott Strickland hired a guy like him. Scott's from Mississippi. He's humble. He's respectful. He's nice to everybody. He came on the show with us once, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
He came on with us.
It was when Florida was competing in gymnastics.
That's what it was.
The national
championship. But Scott and I have been friends a long time. Scott, I've known Scott since 1988. Mike Keith told me today he's known him even longer. You know, so I've known Scott a long time, right about the time he was a student, just after him being a student. And so, but he's respectful, humble, gentle-spirited, gentle, and I think that's what he hired. A Southern guy, a Southern gentleman, an organized, detailed, workaholic Southern gentleman like him. And I think in that Dan Mullen, even though they worked together a long time, they were very different. I can tell you. Dan had a brashness, a little bit of an arrogance, a slickness to him. That is not Scott Strickland. That is not who Scott is. And so I think he hired a guy like him to build the program. And I think Miami said, enough's enough. Let's put more money into it than anybody believes we can. I think Miami fans were a little offended that everybody seemed to think, well, they don't have as much money as the other schools, and they can't afford what the other schools can, and they're broke. Well, we'll show you. We'll outspend all of you. Well, we're going to have the highest paid AD and one of the highest paid coaches. And I think they so.
And I don't remember where I saw it on Twitter, but someone tweeted that the reason Miami could spend this much is because they have a health program or a hospital that made $400 million in profits last year.
Yeah, but that's part of it. But there's also two or three boosters that have billion dollar companies. And so I think that's made it possible for them to go get again. The Cristobal hire is $8 million. If they do hire Dan Radakovic, a $3 million AD is unheard of. That's unheard of. That one surprised me. Mario doesn't surprise anybody. They were going to pay whatever it took to get him. So it'll be interesting to see. All right, let's say hello to Rick Below.
Now, the two-minute drill, brought to you by Tire Outlet. Tire Outlet is now hiring. Visit TireOutlet.com/careers, equal opportunity employer.
Well, you're a wordsmith of sorts. You can turn a phrase.
Mm-hmm.
How would you describe that drive from Marina Del Rey to LAX in the very last night? How would you describe that? I mean, you're a broadcaster.
Well, I would describe it as simply this. We were the only two people on the road who were not stoned. And that was a problem. Okay?
Rick and I are driving the rental car back, and I've never seen more cars in my life in one area, and it was Sunday night at 11 o'clock.
It was absolutely incredible.
I mean, you can't imagine the traffic at LAX Sunday night. You can't. I missed one turn, and I think 12 hours later, we finally got to the airport.
Oh, yeah.
We literally were astounded that there were that many people. You can't imagine.
And then we get there, and they drop the there's no no PSA. was that what it's called?
The TSA.
Yeah. Whatever it's called.
We got the TSA to go, sorry, sir, it's closed.
They tell us it's closed.
Yeah. You know who I had with me? Smooth Talker.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Baloo, when the smooth talking was over.
That's why I ever told.
Yeah. When Baloo was done smooth talking, they walked us to the gate. I mean, that's how good that smooth talking was.
Yeah, but
we had a fun trip.
It's a different world out there. It really is.
But Rick and I were talking about this. I've been to LaGuardia and JFK plenty of times.
Mm-hmm.
I've taken rental cars back to LaGuardia and JFK 1,000 times. Nothing like this.
Yeah.
Nothing like this.
And I've been to LAX many times. I don't
Me too.
Ever remember it being the way it was last night.
Yeah.
So. Especially at 10 o'clock at night. It was crazy. But
what a weekend.
There you have it. Wow, man. Everything is going on, man. I mean, what Bama did to Georgia and all these college football hires and – you know, the Jaguars, again, just can't do anything offensively. Certainly we'll have plenty to cover here over the next couple of hours.
All right, all coming up. You're going to tell us about Venice Beach or no? Is there going to be details?
I'm probably going to talk about that. Maybe I don't have a Jim Morrison story, but I've got a Ray Manzarek story. Robbie Kreider. John Densmore.
Love it.
All right, there you go. By the way, the Doors, they got it done without a bassist.
How about that?
Ray Manzarek played the bass with the organ. Baby.
I didn't know that.
Okay, you had an organist, a guitarist, a lead singer, and a drummer, period.
And that's kind of, that's what you get on that show tonight, okay? So I don't care. Don't go eat dinner. Eat that. Listen to Baloo going into the night. That's what you need to do. Folks, that's our program. Thanks for being part of it. But don't go anywhere. Rick Baloo goes into the night. Tomorrow we'll be here from 2 to 4, our normal time, on a Tuesday until the end of football season. I'm going to bed. For Hayes, Lauren, and Gibby, I'm Frank Frangie. So long.